Today on This Week in Iowa, the three people vying for a seat on Iowa's Supreme Court. Then, with education funding passed for next year, what did Democrats lose out on? What MedFarm hopes to see as Iowa moves towards medical marijuana expansion, and a discussion on the mutual benefits between Des Moines and Kosovo. And thank you for joining us on This Week in Iowa. I'm Stephanie Engelson.
And I'm Jack Miller. Good morning. Schools around Iowa will get an extra $168 per student next year. Lawmakers passed an educational funding bill 3 weeks behind schedule, and Governor Kim Reynolds signed it on Thursday. The legislation increases supplemental aid by $85.6 million. This is in addition to the extra $13 million Reynolds already approved for next year to help level the playing field among all Iowa schools, rural, urban, and everything in between. We sit down with State Senator Claire Selce later in this show on what she wanted from the education funding.
Well, Iowa's medical marijuana program could be expanded. The Iowa House passed a bill last week adding severe autism and PTSD to the list of conditions qualifying for medical marijuana use. The bill also caps the amount of THC at 4.5 grams every 90 days. MedFarm, a manufacturer of medical cannabidiol, wants to get rid of that cap. We'll speak with MedFarm later on in the show.
Three finalists have been selected for an open justice seat on the Iowa Supreme Court. The State Judicial Nominating Commission met two Fridays ago to interview 15 applicants to fill the upcoming vacancy on the Iowa Supreme Court, left by retiring Justice David Wiggins. Governor Kim Reynolds will select one from the following three: Mary Cicchelli of Cedar Rapids, Matt McDermott of Des Moines, and David May of Polk City. She had 30 days from when the three were selected to make her decision.
Well, the top Republican in the Iowa Senate announced he won't be seeking re-election. Iowa Senate President Charles Schneider announced he will be retiring from his seat at the end of his term. The Republican lawmaker was first elected in 2012 and first elected as Senate President in 2018. Before that, he was part of the West Des Moines City Council. He said he plans to focus on his career and family. His seat is up for election this year.
Iowa's Department of Education has a new leader. Governor Kim Reynolds has appointed Dr. Ann Lebo for the top job. Dr. Lebo was formerly the executive director of the Iowa Board of Education Examiners. She's been there since 2016. She started her new job on Friday. The education director became available after Director Ryan Wise accepted a new position as dean of the School of Education at Drake University.
Well, up next, the House and Senate agree on giving more money to schools for next year, what Democrats wanted to see out of the deal.
You're watching This Week in Iowa, Sunday morning talk focused on the political scene in Iowa.
Welcome back. I'm Jack Miller. We're talking education funding here in Iowa, and sitting with me is Senator Claire Selce, Democrat, who also sits on the Senate Education Committee. And thanks for being with us, first
of
all,
Claire. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, congratulations on getting a deal done. The governor recently signed education funding for another year at a 2.3% increase,
yes.
Right? And that is always the big number that, you know, the media likes to focus on and everything. And I know it's below what you as a Senate Democrat were hoping for.
Absolutely,
right?
It is. It amounts to about $47 million lower than Democrats were proposing.
Mm-hmm.
And as any school administrator or teacher will tell you, they would have loved to have that extra money.
Mm-hmm.
Our schools have been underfunded for about a decade now.
Mm-hmm.
So every, you know, under expectation year that mm-hmm. comes, it just piles up on top of the last year and makes it worse.
So you say for about 10 years now, Iowa has had a heralded education system nationwide for mm-hmm. decades.
Yes.
Every year that we don't quite make the grade, In your view, do you think it's a little bit of sort of attrition of just fewer and fewer things that we're able to do?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Believe me, I've talked to thousands of Iowans about this issue. We don't have mountains, we don't have oceans, but we do have our public education system, mm-hmm. as you mentioned, used to be known as one of the best in the country. I'm sorry that that status is kind of slipping away now.
Mm-hmm.
Without being able to pay our teachers more, without being able to provide the programs and low class sizes that our students want and that is beneficial to learning, we are really shorting our kids. And I can't think of anything more that we should be investing in, especially when we need people to take jobs in our economy, than education. Public education is the great equalizer.
With Republicans in control of both chambers, Republican in the governor's mansion, you as a Democrat, I mean, are you just trying to do as much as you can right now to slow what you view as sort of the decay?
Yes. So Democrats actually vote for education bills all the time. We go along with transportation equity for rural schools. We go along with all kinds of different bills, slightly lowering teacher standards to get teachers in certain positions in our state because there's a shortage. So we're doing everything we can as Democrats to participate with the Republicans and make our, you know, make our, I guess, position in our state better. But when they come in with this low number every year, that's really the basic, you know, budget that each school has. So when that is shorted, all the other sprinkles on the top really don't matter.
Right. Republicans say they're trying to balance a budget. There are many other obligations that the state has that they don't feel they'd be able to adequately meet if they funded education to your satisfaction. I mean, there would be something else you'd have to give up, wouldn't there, as a Democrat?
I don't buy that at all. We had a huge budget surplus last year, over $200 million, and then we had another one on top of that right afterwards. So instead of spending that money on our critical needs, let me just list a few: public education, flood relief, or the children's mental health program. They spent pretty much zero on all of those things, and then they're planning another tax cut. So I reject the notion that we are doing it to save money, because we're hurting. We're not hurting. We have the money. We could have put it in this year, and we decided not to, and that was a Republican decision.
Okay. What do you think the funding would be if Democrats were in control here?
We proposed a very, very doable 3% this year in both the House and the Senate, and that was rejected. We ran a bill and or an amendment, and it was rejected by on a party line vote. We could have easily afforded that. Like I said, that would have been an extra $47 million. If Democrats are in charge, we probably would have been somewhere at like a 4%, which is what our school districts are telling us they need just to maintain status quo, not even to get ahead. Because inflation is killing them with healthcare costs and other costs that are rising, and they just can't survive in this kind of a atmosphere.
It's a very political issue in Iowa. Do you think it's going to take a change of power down at the legislature to reverse what you've seen as quite a bit of loss here over the past decade?
Absolutely. You know, when Vilsack was in power, our education budgets were much more like 4 or 5, 6% every year, which was a much more doable number for our schools. So I do think getting more Democrats in the legislature is pretty much the only way to fix it, because Republicans really have a status quo attitude, and I don't see that changing anytime soon.
All right, Senator Claire Selce, we thank you for all your hard work
down
at the legislature. Good luck going forward the rest of the session. Still ahead, Iowa's medical marijuana program is on a path toward expansion. How one state manufacturer says it will be impacted.
You're watching This Week in Iowa, Sunday Morning Talk focused on the political scene in Iowa.
Welcome back, everyone. I want to welcome Lucas Nelson with MedFarm Iowa here today to talk to us about the Iowa House passing the bill that we just spoke about to expand Iowa's medical marijuana program. As we said earlier, it expanded the condition list, adding severe ADHD, autism, and PTSD to that list. Also, though, putting a cap on the THC levels at 4.5
grams over 90
every 90
days.
Okay, so a lot of numbers there, but let's start by talking about this bill. Did it go as far as you and MedFarm would like to see, as far as making it available to more Iowans in the doses that they need?
You know, it's a good first step, getting those additional conditions added. Those were both conditions that had been already approved by the board and kind of got hung up in some red tape, so I think that's a good step. But at the same time, I would say it does not go far enough as far as what is needed in this program for THC.
Okay. Now, THC seems to be one of those issues that really either scares people or makes them want to pause. So what is it about the THC in medical marijuana that you think has people kind of concerned?
You know, I think there is some evidence out there that suggests some people can have side effects with it, and I think that's why there is that bit of hesitation. But even in the bill that was passed, which largely followed what the advisory board had been looking for, they clearly recognized that a higher amount was needed. They used a mechanism that requires doctors to dose, which I think has a lot of potential federal legality issues, but even they still recognize that there are those patients out there that need a higher amount of THC.
And are we finding that it's been hard for patients, even though this is legal and they fit the list, is it hard for patients to get connected with medical marijuana in Iowa?
You know, it still is, whether that's having a difficult time finding a doctor, which hopefully some of the improvements in the bill will actually help correct by allowing other providers to actually certify, whether that's getting to the dispensary, whether that's being able to actually afford the medicine or getting the doses that they need in the forms they need. So there are still a lot of issues that I think we've got to improve on if we're going to actually make this work for patients.
Okay. Now, we know MedPharm is a business. You're
sure.
In the business of helping people, but it is a business. So in order to be around to help people, do you kind of need these bills to make it easier for patients to come and get this?
That's exactly it. Our entire business centers on actually helping our patients, helping these suffering Iowans. And if there aren't those patients who can actually access the program and who can receive these medicines in a way that makes sense for them to continue on them, then those patients go away. And obviously that means MedPharm and the rest of the industry goes away. So it's really, really important that we make sure it's as easy as possible, with appropriate restrictions still, to get access to the medicines in, again, those doses that they need.
And we know here, but maybe people at home don't know, that this whole program, the entire state's program, is overseen by a board. So what's your impression of the board's work so far?
You know, I certainly understand that they want to take things slow. At the same time, I think maybe a more well-rounded and kind of holistic approach, understanding that there isn't one size fits all for this. There isn't necessarily one amount of THC that's going to work for every single patient. And that's what we've tried to continue to present to them. I think they're slowly getting there, hopefully. But it really is important to recognize that this just does not work exactly the same for everyone. And so we've got to have a program that can encompass all of those different Iowans across the state who are suffering.
And are you finding there's still a lot of misconceptions about medical marijuana?
Always, almost
yes.
Every day. But, you know, for those patients who are in the program, I think those have been some of the best stories we've seen and some of the success they've had. And so once you start interacting with people like that, hopefully all that really matters is that they're getting that relief.
And you've talked about some of the amazing stories that you've seen patients receive good results from this. What are some of the conditions that you're seeing really being improved by medical marijuana?
You know, the pain category is quite broad, but so many different conditions, whether that's fibromyalgia or whether that's someone who's been in an accident and maybe had some limited use of limbs or those sorts of things and just has that pain throughout their entire body every single day, making it hard to even get up. It's been amazing to see that those people have been able to get back their life. Maybe it's play with their grandkids. Maybe it's go back to work. Mm-hmm. Those sorts of things are exactly why this program was set up, and I know we can offer that relief to even more people if we can just get it expanded a little more.
And what do you think it's going to take to get it expanded?
I don't know.
million-dollar question.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. No, I think it's really about being smart, presenting that scientific evidence that is out there, mm-hmm. whether that's from this country or other well-developed programs in other countries, and showing people that over the year and change that we've had this program, we haven't seen abuse, we haven't seen diversion, we haven't seen those types of issues that some were afraid of. And then so, you know, at that point, I hope that those things help people get over the hump and realize that we've got to expand this.
It sounds like you've got a lot of good evidence on your side here.
Indeed.
Well, I want to thank you so much for coming in and talking to us
yes,
today.
Yes, thank you.
Really appreciate your time. And then coming up next, Kosovo's capital is sister cities with Des Moines. The cultural and economic benefits achieved with this relationship.
You're watching This Week in Iowa, Sunday morning talk focused on the political scene in Iowa.
Welcome back to the show. I'm here with Ryan Carroll, who's with the Greater Des Moines Partnership. Thanks for joining us, Ryan.
My pleasure.
We're talking about the city's relationship that it has with Pristina, Kosovo, which is something that take us back to the beginning of how this began and what the intention of this partnership is.
Yeah, pleasure to be here. Mm-hmm. And this relationship actually started back in 2011 as a result of the state partnership program that the Iowa National Guard established with Kosovo. Mm-hmm. And it really sort of grew from there. It was really decided that we do more than just military kinds of things. Mm-hmm. So from that standpoint, we want to do more with economic development and education and those different types of things. And so in 2013, there was a state, Iowa Sister State program, mm-hmm. step in and developed a relationship with Kosovo. And then from there, we started seeing the sister city relationships. Mm-hmm. One of the big things that happened in that time frame as well is Kosovo established a consulate office in Des Moines in 2016. Mm-hmm. And then following that in 2018, it was a natural progression to have the two capital cities become sister mm-hmm. cities.
And for those not familiar with Kosovo, part of the former Yugoslavia, kind of a war-torn area with a lot of ethnic problems over the years. Yes. And now it's a new market. It's a growing market, but they kind of need some guidance and some ties to others that know how to do it the right way. Is that basically it in a nutshell?
That really is. Mm-hmm. That's been one of the really neat things about this is we've been able to take what we do in Des Moines mm-hmm. and really building that economy and that brand and distributing that nationally throughout the United States mm-hmm. and really give them some insights on the importance of regionalism, of public-private partnerships, mm-hmm. and those different kinds of things to really elevate a given area.
Do we see a lot of the expertise that we have here in Des Moines kind of being spread out and being used by those from Kosovo?
We sure do. There's mm-hmm. been a lot of exchanges, certainly from the business component, educational component. We've seen law enforcement and obviously the military pieces. So they've really encompassed a lot of the resources mm-hmm. that we have around our area.
And do local businesses more than just mentoring and helping and guiding and assisting, do they hope to establish some actual economic ties that benefit businesses here in Iowa too?
That's what we're really working towards. Mm-hmm. So at this point in time, we're really kind of trying to help them establish a good economic base, if you will. So mm-hmm. going back to all the challenges that they face after the war, mm-hmm. for example. So they've got a very young population right now. So mm-hmm. a lot of young people are stepping up into big roles that maybe they weren't ready to do necessarily yet in some cases. And so we're really helping them establish that mm-hmm. basic background. And then from there, obviously we want to, we're really being intentional about making Des Moines a much more global city. Mm-hmm. And so we're always looking for opportunities for trade, foreign direct investment, really going both directions with that.
Good foothold in Europe there. We can't conduct this interview in the current environment of coronavirus without asking you a question about that. Have you seen any ways, because this is an international pairing,
yes,
and we've seen that travel is being restricted to and from Europe. So have you seen any impact already because of this, and what do you think the possible, hopefully short-term obstacles might be?
Yeah, we've certainly seen an impact from that. We're having those conversations. The Greater Des Moines Partnership is monitoring this very closely on an almost hour-by-hour basis, really, at this given point in time. We actually just hosted 12 mayors from Kosovo who were here a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. And so if that would have happened now, I'm not sure that we would be able to move forward with that. So, mm-hmm. yeah, certainly we're going to monitor that situation moving forward. We've got great connectivity over there, so I don't see it really creating an obstacle for what we're trying to do. It'll make it a little bit more difficult and a little less travel back and forth here in the near term, but, mm-hmm. but certainly we have strong enough ties with them that I think as we move forward, we'll figure out a way to do it.
Mm-hmm. And when the folks from Pristina are here, or people from Iowa and Des Moines are over there, there's got to be some real interesting cultural learning that goes on. Has that been a big part of this program as well?
It's been a big part of it, yes. Mm-hmm. We've hosted multiple government officials, business leaders from over there, and we've really been able to give them a good flavor of Central Iowa and really Iowa as a whole and just kind of how we operate and we do things, and they've been able to engage in our culture a little bit. I traveled to Kosovo myself mm-hmm. in 2017 and got to see that firsthand, and just what an incredible experience that was for me. Culturally, I've never felt as welcome as an American in a foreign country mm-hmm. as I did there. It's incredible to see all of the U.S. flags, the Iowa flags mm-hmm. That fly in Kosovo, and just their genuine thankfulness for our country has helped them with in some difficult times.
And it's a beautiful land that has a lot of tourism potential too, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. Uh-huh. They have mountains and those possibilities there that we certainly don't have here. Right. So.
All right. Ryan Carroll with the Greater Des Moines Partnership, thanks so much for being with us today.
My pleasure. Thank you.
We'll be right back.
We want to thank you so much for joining us on This Week in Iowa. If you missed anything or any of our previous shows in this month, you can check out our podcast on Spotify, where we cover all things political in Iowa.
Yeah, we've got a lot of new digital resources for you here at Local 5 as well. We have a new app where you can also track This Week in Iowa and politics, and our new website, all new, weareiowa.com, that has a whole section and a tab dedicated to This Week in Iowa.
And we hope to see you again next Sunday. Have a great week.